Today's episode is brought to you by our friends over at Virgil Films. With over 25 years of distribution experience, Virgil has released such hits as Super Size Me and the Oscar-nominated Restrepo, along with a trove of indie treasures like Forks Over Knives, To Die For, 7 Yards, and Speed is Expensive. Now, you can find all of those films, along with the entire Virgil catalog, on any transactional platform out there, like Amazon, Apple TV, YouTube, Tubi, and the rest. Are you a filmmaker and you're having trouble with distribution? Talk to Virgil. They work with every major platform directly, and they offer a variety of deals that fit with every filmmaker's needs, from standard distribution to service deals. They do it all. And they don't just distribute films, they elevate them. Truthfully, they're just really good people to work with. So if you want to learn more, head on over to virgilfilms.com and tell them Christian Taylor sent you. And now, on with the show. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Documentary First, a look at documentary filmmaking. I'm your host, Christian Taylor, and a documentary filmmaker myself. I'm sitting down with storytellers from all over the world in every stage of their careers, from all walks of life, who capture real life one frame at a time so we can all become better filmmakers. Now, if you're new to our show, please take a moment to subscribe to the podcast if you like what you hear by the end, of course, and follow us on all the typical social media channels. Additionally, if you're only listening to this podcast and you like to feel more like you're in the studio with us, you can catch the show on our YouTube channel. All right. Now, on with the show. Today, I am joined by film buff, historian, distributor, producer, filmmaker, and doting grandfather, Joe Amadei. Welcome to our show, Joe.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's so nice to have you. We have had Joe on our show several times. He is also a sponsor to our podcast. We are incredibly grateful for that. We've had him here, and he is a sponsor because he happens to be my distributor. He is my distributor because I was referred to Joe, or Joe was referred to me by Mary Owen. Her mother was Donna Reed of the Donna Reed Show, and It's a Wonderful Life, if you know her. And she said to me, you have to meet him. He is one of the good guys, is what she told me.
Well,
and boy, was she right. You have been one of the good guys. It is why I have you back all the time. And I just have been so grateful just with our relationship. And not only that, you just know your stuff. You've been in this business for a really long time. And I want you to tell people about that. So talk to people about, you know, a little bit about your history in the business. They can go back and hear long, you know, about you. And just, we've talked about your history in the business, but give us the brief bio.
Yes, but I want to take 30 seconds just to talk about your podcast. And from the very first time I was on it years ago to where it is today.
Okay.
It's expanded to a point where you're now one of the major podcasts when it comes to helping filmmakers and guiding filmmakers across all levels of making films, from pre-production through production, through what do you do after your movie is done? How do you find a good distributor? And I've also noticed that unlike me, who most people don't have a clue who I am, you're starting to get some substantial guests. I mean, the Billy Joel folks were absolutely phenomenal. I think I listened to one of those podcasts twice, and Ken Burns. I mean, this is not, you know, we're talking big time here. So I want to congratulate you on this podcast. I really want to make sure that was one of the main reasons I wanted to do this again. I'm a listener. I listen every week.
Thank you. It's been a real journey. You know, we've found our way, and I was so delighted by the Susan Levy podcast, because at the end, when cameras were not rolling, I asked her, how can I work with you, or how can I grow? And she said, yeah, get in touch with me. You're a really great interviewer. And I just wanted to fall over. I couldn't believe it. But so it's just been, I've learned a lot doing this, and I do enjoy talking to filmmakers, hearing about their journeys, because they're all different. Nobody's journey is the same.
Nobody's.
Everybody's is different. And the industry has changed so much all over the years, as well as the podcast industry. You and I were talking earlier, I might as well announce it now. We have decided to do a mini podcast in between our releases. It's going to be called Documentary First, The Deep Dive. And we're going to take something that sits with me every week and talk about it a little bit more in depth. So, you know, everybody take a, you know, look out for that. It's going to be really great. I'm looking forward to it. Our first one's going to be about Jeffrey Roth, who was actually a film that you are releasing.
Great film, Man with the Hat. Go rent it.
Yeah. It is a great film. Yeah. Highly recommend that film. Just super exciting and just very interesting. So,
you know, it's great. It's great. You know, I'll combine my bio with what's happening. I've been doing this since the days of VHS. That's the easiest way to say this. So I've been in the business since those days and worked for a couple of different studios, had a stint at Turner. When Ted Turner was running the company until he sold it to AOL, went to PolyGram until that was sold to Universal, and then ran USA Home Entertainment for a while, the home entertainment division. We released movies like Traffic and Being John Malkovich, and that was also sold to Universal. And then I started my own thing with a couple partners. At the time, it was called Heart Sharp, changed to Arts Alliance, and then it changed to Virgil Films when I took over about 25 years ago. So been through it all, been through all the changes from VHS to DVD, from DVD to streaming, from streaming to transactional. My company has been able to be one of the leaders on the independent side of taking a film and getting it put up and making it available for the consumer to purchase. The hard part is two things. One, alerting the consumer that it's out there. And two, giving them a reason to rent the film. And it used to be that you were able to do that through print ads and TV spots and reviews in every single newspaper in America, big city and small towns. They all had film critics. All of that is gone. I mean, yes, the New York Times still publishes reviews. That's about it. Rotten Tomatoes, it just doesn't really resonate with the consumer. So what do you do? I mean, and filmmakers ask, what do I do? And what you're doing, and what a lot of other podcasts about filmmaking and film distribution and just movies in general, this is slowly becoming the way. It hasn't taken over completely yet, but it's becoming a force. And we, as a distributor, need to lean more into it and become a bigger part of that. And it's something that you're already doing. And it's extremely important because there is no other way to get the word out about the movies that we release.
No, and I'll tell you, I've seen a huge uptick in how we are being pitched. We're being pitched for filmmakers to come on our podcast from, you know, New York to LA to everywhere in between. And I think that's a testament to, I mean, we're getting, you know, HBO reaching out to us to promote their films and Ken Burns. So it's happening at every level because it's difficult for every film for people to discover it. It's not just the independent filmmaker. So that's what's fascinating about our industry these days. You know, if you're not Amazon or Netflix and Apple TV promoting your own stuff, how are people going to find you? You know, the one thing I will say, I mean, I questioned you guys a lot about this in the beginning. You know, what I will say is that you do have a method for pitching those platforms, the films, and there is a small window by which you know, all of those platforms have ways that they allow their, you know, distributors to pitch films to be advertised. So for example, for me on Veterans Day, they allow, you know, distributors to pitch their films that are veteran focused to go on a slate of veteran focused films to be advertised during that day. And I used to be so frustrated that, you know, okay, it'd be sold for 99 cents or whatever. But I now understand the philosophy behind that is, you know, somebody buys it for 99 cents or 100 people do, and then they refer it to their friends and then they refer it to their friends. And it, you know, it kind of, you want it to get on a roll and pick up speed. And so there is at least that.
Yeah. I mean, it's a change, one of the many, you know, seismic changes that our industry goes through. It seems to be every week there's a different volcano erupting, but
yeah.
And we can, you know, we can concentrate, you know, sometimes when the big stuff happens and, you know, Netflix, Warners, we concentrate on that and we read all about it and it, you know, we talk about it, but at the end of the day, it really doesn't mean anything to independent, real small independent filmmakers, because it's a great read. And we know the people at Netflix and we know the people at Warner Brothers and how that might affect them. As a consumer, it might affect us. But at the end of the day, it's, you know, the person that's out there making a film on credit cards or however they end up financing a film. Yeah, that's not really going to, those billion-dollar deals aren't really going to affect us.
Yeah, they really aren't. And like you said, there are just very few avenues for filmmakers to advertise their films. And even if, I mean, the thing that's interesting about you, Joe, is that Amazon made a rule, and I don't know when, you can tell me, that individuals could not upload their films to Amazon.
Yeah, and happened a couple of years ago.
And that may be true. Is that true for Apple TV as well?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and
well,
then
Apple TV for streaming. Apple TV, as far as like the old, I still call it iTunes. I don't know if you can do it on your own. I wouldn't recommend it, but I don't.
Yeah, but I don't think you can.
You can put it up on your own, but then what do you do? You're a filmmaker. You're not a distributor that is giving them, you know, product every single week. You know, that's right. What they're going to pay attention to. You know, well, my guy Tim, or my partner Tim, he's the guy that puts these films up, and he works with that account to get that placement that you want. Yeah, it's easy to put a film up, but if you're not in the new release section on Street Date, you know, when the film comes out, you're going to get lost right away. And I'm not saying that we're 100%, but we're pretty close to 100% of getting our films on those accounts on, you know, Street Week, I should call it, and getting the placement that we need. Very hard to do.
It is. And, you know, you were grandfathered in for the distributors on Amazon, as I understand it, because then distributors were told, I think, they were kind of boxed out, right?
Yeah, I mean, no, they're not really boxed out. And I don't want to get too much into that part of the business on a podcast, to be honest with you. But, you know, we can still put films up. We don't go through the, I guess it's called the Amazon Prime method, where you put a film up and you get paid a certain amount of money per view. We don't have to do that. We still get a transaction. We get a cut of the transaction. And yeah, we still have that deal.
Well, so we won't get into all that. But one thing I do know, and we say this at the top of the podcast, is that you make your deals with filmmakers whose films you bring into your slate of films. You can make deals with filmmakers at every level and for whatever fits the filmmaker. And that is one thing that I really respect about you guys. You're willing to work with a filmmaker for their needs, you know, and you're very flexible that way. I remember when I first was talking to a certain distributor, they originally turned me down, and then I won a film festival and the prize was distribution with them. Oh. And oh, I got my revenge. And then they never responded to me to give me my prize. And I had to track them down through the film festival. And then the offer that they gave me for my prize was locking me in for 15 years and, you know, not a very good deal. And then you got to do all your own work. We're not going to really support you. And I was like, oh my goodness. And that was 8 years ago or so.
Sure. So you know, one of the things that we started about 2 years ago, and it's just not for everybody, but there are so many films that never find distribution. And, you know, the film might be 2 years old, 3 years old. And, you know, all the filmmaker wants is to make sure that the film is put up on Amazon and is put up on iTunes and is available, because they have to report back to their financiers. And when their financiers say, I help finance your movie and it's nowhere, that's not a good thing, especially if you want to go make another movie. So, but those films come to us, and some of them are extremely risky. There is a cost that we put up to put the film up. If we view a film and say, I probably won't even make those costs back, I can't release the movie. But we come up with a service deal where, you know, there's a fee. It's a flat fee. And I guarantee the film will be put up. But it's a non-recoupable fee, and it depends on the film, on what that fee is. But it gives the filmmaker the opportunity to get their film up. And we've done this quite a few times. We've never put a film up that made any money.
Wait, say that one more time.
We've never put a film up through a service deal that has made a substantial amount of money. Because in most cases, you know, sometimes you make a movie and it's not that it's a bad movie, but the subject matter is just not going to resonate with the consumer at all. But you still want your film available on Amazon, and we give you that opportunity to do that.
Are those filmmakers that then pay that service fee and put their film up, are they disappointed and like wish they hadn't done it?
No, thankful? They're thrilled. They can go back to their financiers and say, the movie's available on Amazon.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. You know, it kind of leads into one of my questions, which is, do you have a number these days that a documentary filmmaker should stay inside of in order to at least break even or get a return on their investment?
That's a scary question. It really varies on the subject matter of the doc, but I try to tell people, independent, true independent filmmakers. I'm not talking about movies at A24 releases or my friends at Neon. But if it's a true independent film, documentary, that will probably most likely not be picked up by a streamer and just go straight to transactional, I would not spend tops more than $250.
Yeah.
Tops.
That's what I was actually thinking.
I mean, I've talked to filmmakers that have said to me, yeah, it cost me $70,000 to make my movie. I'm like, wow, that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Well, the rule is the less it costs you, the better it is for everybody, no doubt. So let me ask you this. Tell me right now, and let me guess. I said, let's play a game. I want to know the...
They're scaring me.
I want to know sort of the top selling genres all the way down. So you said it depends on what the subject matter is in terms of how much you should spend on your, you know, movie and, you know, where you're going to make your return. So horror or murder mystery, whatever it's called.
True crime.
That's called. True crime. That's it. So horror, true crime. Let's see.
Now, are you talking documentaries? You're just talking all genres.
No, documentaries.
Well, horror documentaries, you mean?
What do you mean by horror documentary?
That's what I was going to ask you. What do you mean by horror documentary? You said horror, not me.
Horror. Horror.
Okay. Listen, I think every single podcast.
I'm not done guessing the order.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Horror. Maybe that was my Mississippi accent coming out. True crime. Let's see what comes next. Maybe sports.
I wish.
No, that's not it. What comes next? Horror, true crime. What would come next? I don't even know. I know they kill it, and that's the big...
Well, true crime is, you know, as much as we all hate to say it, you make a documentary about a serial killer, it's going to work.
Is it war and, like, exposing, like, political stuff or...
If you can talk about, you know, well, it's true crime first. It's health and well-being second. It's inspirational stories, and that could include sports could fall into that. Is probably third, though. If you want to make a sports it's inspirational sports documentaries, but then also. You know, maybe even topping true crime or equaling number one is anything that is controversial or salacious or, you know, crazy stories about people doing really crazy, sometimes evil things to each other. Exploitation is the best way to say it. And this is, you know, this is not stuff that you and I would make. We might watch it, but it's up there. But, you know,
like Anna, what's her name? What's her name? You know, the Russian girl or who said she was Russian.
Yeah, perfect example. Or the woman who tainted the blood or was collecting the blood.
Right.
Just asked for a pardon.
Yeah. What about like the mountaineers? What are those called? Like the risky.
Were you the guys that climbed Kilimanjaro and stuff like that?
Yeah, that kind
of thing. You know, it's funny. No, it doesn't work anymore. There's so many. We released a movie called The Quest last year. Wonderful film. And about a guy, you know, his quest was to climb Kilimanjaro. And it just didn't, I mean, really has not worked so far. We did a film years ago about a bunch of soldiers coming back from Iraq, each one of them having severe PTSD. And they got together to climb the mountain. I don't know why. And I've had multiple conversations with Nat Geo about these types of films. And they have said to me, and I think they're right, there's just a lot of them. And there's a lot on Nat Geo. And so there's, you know, do we need one more movie about that same subject, as beautiful as it might be? But, you know,
what about
funny.
Nat Geo? What about animal docs and things like that?
You know, I would, somebody, there is a, I don't even know if we can call it a film. There is a collection of cat videos. Okay, so where do you hear this? This is for all filmmakers out there. There is 90 minutes of cat videos, and we all know what cat videos are because you watch them on YouTube and TikTok. The most adorable cat videos, 90 minutes, and it was put into a package, into a film, and it's being distributed as a cat video fest. So if you go and you Google this, you will see Cat Video Fest appearing at almost every independent movie theater in the country. It's not, you're not going to find it at Regal or AMC. So we have a local theater here, independent, you know, theater that I do a once a month movie club with, where I show classic films and we discuss them. And I went to him and I said, you need to do this cat video thing. And he's like, you're out of your mind, cat videos. 52 seat theater. He sold out in about 4 days.
My word. Well, I will tell you, I went to a film festival. I can't remember what it was. Maybe it was the Dubuque Film Festival. And I saw a film, Cat Daddies. This is a couple of years ago. And did you ever see it?
I've heard about it.
Oh my gosh, it was awesome.
Yeah.
It was awesome. Yeah. There's just something about this.
Yeah. So you and I need to get a camera and go find some dogs. Yeah, there's no dogs yet. But that's how crazy things are. But it also speaks directly to what people want to see. And what people want to see that no one will recognize, especially at the studio level. Just look at today's Oscar noms and you can realize this. They want to see something that makes them feel good.
That's true.
They want to see something that takes them away to the horrors that are going on everywhere right now. And it is a horror right now. So if it's 90 minutes of cat videos, and I'm not a cat person, I recognize that. And so I'm still of the belief that if you make an inspirational documentary about any subject and you market it right, you through all the methods that we're talking about right now, and you get it out there, it could work. And that could be about Normandy. That could be about a man searching for lost treasures in Egypt, man with the hat. It could be about, you know, a couple that is having problems with their young child because he's eating the wrong
red dye.
These types of films are working now. Are they making $1 million? No, but they're making money and they consistently make money. So it can be done. It can definitely be done.
Yeah. And I will say, you know, as far as my film goes, what I was shocked about was you guys were even able to find me quite a bit of money from Canal Plus.
Yeah.
That was just stunning. Yeah. That was the biggest deal. I never even imagined that would happen. And, you know, it's still making money. I mean, it's not only on, you know, the streaming services, but, you know, people are still booking us to. Now, I do wonder how the political environment is going to change that. And I desperately wish I could change the cover and even the name, because truly my film is about gratitude for, you know, sacrifice and what others have done for you. That's the theme of my movie. And so I never in a million years, I thought my film would be evergreen and that it would never be challenged. And I just could never imagine where we are today. So that tells you how much I can predict the future.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's interesting, the Canal Plus deal. I mean, it's specific because obviously your film takes place in France. But the sad part about all of this is there are successes. But again, there's 7 out of 10 films don't make it.
Yeah. Well, I want to come back to you. You'd referenced The Man with the Hat. You'd referenced the film you were talking about is To Die For. Yes. We had them on the podcast. They were a very different. They went about their stuff a very different way. And I'm going to ask you a question about, you know, kind of what filmmakers have done things right and which ones have, you know, have made mistakes. But before we get to that, you also mentioned the Oscars. So today, Oscar noms came out. Let's talk about that for a second. What do you think?
I mean, it was very predictable. I don't have a problem. You know, I don't have a problem with any of the nominations. They're all really good films.
Well, why don't you tell us? I haven't even read them yet. So let's announce them.
I would have to remember, but you know, the best thing I can tell you is that One Battle After Another, Sinners, Frankenstein, Sentimental Value took most of the nominations. Multiple, I think Sinners broke the record. 16 nominations. Right. And Sinners is a really good film. The acting, most of the actors are from those films. The cinematographers from those films. So there wasn't a whole wealth of films, different films that were nominated. There's films that are nominated in Best International Film, which used to be called the Best Foreign Film. Same films are nominated in the Best Film category. So when I look back at it, and again, I don't have any problems with any, they're all good films. I don't know if any of them were great films. You know, to me, Braveheart's a great film. None of them fall into the category of what I would consider great, great, great films.
They're not Out of Africa great?
No. Somebody just sent me a link of the films that won Best Picture in throughout the 1970s. Godfather, Godfather 2. I mean, the list is The Sting, iconic movies. And maybe One Battle After Another or one of these films that gets, you know, that wins will become iconic throughout the years, because sometimes films, you know, gain stature over amount of years. But what to me that was bothersome about this is when four or five films or three or four films get, you know, the bulk of the nominations, it just means that there wasn't a whole lot of good movies made this past year.
You think? Or do you think there is a issue with the voters?
Well, there's that. There is definitely that. But I'm the guy that sees all the films. I still go to the movies 2-3 times a week. I'm going to a movie at 5:30 tonight. At the theaters, that's where I live. That's my...
What are you going to see?
There is a small little film called You Got Me. It's Virginia Madsen's in it. It's about...
It'll come to you when you're not thinking about it.
Yeah. It's about... veterans coming home suffering a PTSD. Small little film, begins with an S. Shutterbug, or might be Shutterbug. So, you know, it plays for 1 week and then will disappear. But I've seen all the films that are nominated, and I go to movies all the time, and I walk out of the theater going, okay, that was okay, you know, or that was good. But I, you know, Train Dreams was probably the only film this past year that no one has seen that I got chills when it was over.
What was that about? I never even heard of it.
There you go. And it's nominated for Best Picture. And you're the average consumer. No, you're above average. Imagine the average consumer that's going to look at this list and they're going to go, all right, I've heard of Sinners. I've heard of One Battle After Another. There's 10 films nominated, by the way. Haven't heard of most of the others. And they're not going to watch the Oscars. So it's I think it's a combination of what you said, the voting establishment, and the fact that there just have not been any, you know, a whole lot of great films.
What were the docs nominated?
It happened 2 hours ago, so I don't really remember. I really don't. Three of them I've never heard of before.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Well,
so anyway, so it's, you know, but the Oscars, you know, they've been what they are for a very long time now, and we all hope they get a little bit better, but I'm happy that Conan is, I'm a big Conan O'Brien fan, so I'm happy that he's hosting. And as far as who ends up winning, you know, the controversy is Wicked, didn't get one nomination. You know, 5 songs were nominated for original song, and Wicked didn't get any of them. Most of those songs are played over the end credits. They have nothing to do with the movie. So, but when you see the nominations, I'm sure.
Yeah, here it is. Yeah. Sinners, 16 nominations. One Battle After Another, 13. Frankenstein, 9. Marty Supreme, 9. Sentimental Value, 9. Hamnet, 8. Begonia, 9. F1, 9. The Secret Agent, I'm sorry, Begonia 4, F1 4, The Secret Agent 4, Train Dreams 4.
So you know, that's most of the, that's probably all of the nominations.
Let's see.
And there's a few with one or two with a smaller.
Yeah, I'm asking what the best nominations were for the documentaries. The Alabama Solution.
Okay, that's very good, by the way. It's on HBO.
HBO Films. Come See Me in the Good Light, Apple. Cutting Through Rocks.
Never heard of it.
Mr. Nobody Against Putin, Pink. And The Perfect Neighbor, Netflix.
Yeah, Perfect Neighbor's good. But it's interesting, though, The Perfect Neighbor. Have you seen The Perfect Neighbor?
No.
I didn't see any of these. If I can remember, I thought it was like a two-part or a three-part series. Maybe they put it all into one. If it's the same, it's about a crazy neighbor and that bad things happen. So I've heard of three of them, but it's always like that with documentary. The best thing about the documentary category is now I will go search for those films that I've never heard of before and make sure that I see them, because I like to see everything that's nominated before the award. So if those films are available, first I got to scout around and see if they are. I know that one of them Kino Lorber has, the one that Putin is in the title.
Mm-hmm.
So I know I can go see it there. So now it's all about discovery. That's one of the good things about the Oscars. Sometimes they bring out films that we've just never seen before.
Yeah, Mr. Nobody Against Putin is the one that you were referencing. Yeah, it's interesting. And it's also interesting, you know, how many of the streamers and, you know, and whose films are, you know, nominated or whose films are in these nominations. All right, let's get back. Let's move on to my other questions. One of them was, or I'd mentioned them, what things have you seen filmmakers do right for this day and age? And then what mistakes have you seen filmmakers make, you know, where their films haven't done well?
And this is kind of easy to answer because then it goes back to what we were just talking about as far as the change in marketing methods. Our biggest successes over the past 2 to 3 years have been films that have come to us where the filmmaker has already done extensive homework into who would want to see their film. So they bring that to the table. A lot of filmmakers don't understand or don't want to understand is that, especially when it comes to a documentary, that filmmaker has lived that story for 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, and we have lived it for 90 minutes. So we are not going to be the experts on that film, and we never will be the experts on that film. So we look to the filmmaker to help us find places to market the film. And in simplistic terms, you're releasing a movie about fighting cancer. Well, you go to every cancer organization in America and try to put things on their websites when the film comes out. Sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't, but that's one method. But more importantly is taking advantage of the podcast world, the blogging world, the reels, threads. I mean, all these new and newer ways of promoting films. And when we have had people that have already started to build their own community, that's when it not only works in the beginning, but it works for years to come.
Yeah. And I thought I had done a great job of that, which I had. I did a really good job. We had curated our audience. But then To Die For came along and I interviewed them and I, you know, watched what they had done and they just blew me out of the water. Now, I do think there is a difference between their audience and mine.
Totally.
And
different. That is two completely different.
This where like there's just they are dealing with a health issue and they are dealing with children. And that those are off the charts in terms of the need for their information and the audience that they built. And, you know, mine's a much more niche, older audience.
But also not to, you know, you're kicking yourself when you shouldn't be. Their film came out years after your film came out. And when your film first came out, none of this stuff existed.
I was also in COVID. I came out in COVID.
Yeah. So that, you know, that just killed everybody thought COVID, we're all going to be staying home. So what are we going to do? We're going to watch movies. Well, no, we didn't.
Well, and the film festival circuit was just not there.
Killed it.
It was brutal.
Yeah.
Brutal, brutal. And then also I had the whole falter with not a good distributor. That was my whole first year. So, I mean, there were plenty of problems in the beginning.
Yeah.
Anyway, you're right. Thank you.
Yeah.
I was kicking myself there for a second. Okay. So yes, now we know what they can do well is curate their own audience and be their best advocate. Continuing to curate their own audience. And, you know, that means a lot of social media. And it doesn't necessarily mean paying for social media. It means knowing what you're doing and probably doing it yourself.
Yeah, that initial budget that you come up with when you make a movie, I try to tell filmmakers, and they don't want to hear it. I'm like, all right, you're going to spend $300,000 to make a movie. 15% of that, you just take off the top and save to the end. No, yes. What do you mean? That's, you know, $40,000 that I'm not going to be able to spend on, you know, whatever. And I'm like, yeah, well, you're going to need it at the end.
Yeah. And, you know, this goes to what I harp on constantly, and I'm going to say it again, which is it happens in the acting world. It also happens in the film world, which is as artists, we are always thinking about the art we want to create. I want to do this. I have this talent. I have this story. I want to tell it. I am good at this. I want to do this. We rarely think about the economics at the end. And what I've learned on this other side is we have to work backwards. We have to say, who is my audience? What am I going to do with this? Is there a market for this? You know, is it a good investment of my time and my money or other people's money? And if the answer is not yes to all of those questions, it is not a wise thing to do, no matter how much I want to do it.
Exactly.
It just doesn't make a lot of sense. And that's a sad, hard answer. But if you really want to do, you know, and I was just thinking about this as we were talking about the cat movies. If I really want to be a filmmaker and that's my calling and I want to make a living doing that, it's sad, but I am going to have to look at the market and look at what they're buying and figure out
you have to.
What story can I make that they want? Not what story right. do I want to tell?
Yeah. So if you're making a story or if your story is just a relatively small story about an individual in a small town that never resonated outside of that small town, it's going to be hard if you're not HBO, you know, or if you're not, you know, someone being backed by a streamer, you know, or Neon or things like that. Now, you know, you can also take that idea that you have and take it to a streamer and try to get them to put up the financing to make it, but they will be involved in the making of the film and they will own the film. So,
right. Let's talk about that for a second, because I know you do that as mm-hmm. well. Talk to us about that process and talk to us about it. Used to, I think, be more successful than it is now since they've been vertically integrating and doing their own films. However, they've stopped putting as much money into making their own stuff. So has that changed in terms of their buying habits?
No, I don't know. They have not stopped putting money into making their own.
I just read something today.
Yeah, well, you can read anything you want.
All right.
They're making their own movies.
Okay. So
maybe their budget went from 26 billion to, and I'm not even exaggerating here, or 5 billion to 4 billion.
Yes, it was the budget. It was about the budget. Yeah. They are spending less money making their own stuff.
But that's where all their money's going. So, you know, perfect example is the Matt Damon, Ben Affleck movie. I think it's called Rip that just premiered on Netflix. Netflix put up the money to make that movie. So every streamer has multiple divisions, and some of them have original production divisions, original documentaries, original series. So say you have an idea for a doc series or a doc film, and you don't have a vehicle to raise the money. So, you know, a pitch is put together. You come to someone like us, and we have the ability of taking that project into the streamers and sitting with the original team and saying, hey, do you like this idea? This is where we're at so far. And if you're interested in possibly putting up the money to make this project, then the next step is I fly out with the director or the producer and do an even bigger pitch. So we do that. We're very selective, obviously, because you don't want to waste your time. We kind of know what not to pitch them. There has to be of a certain quality. And again, and then if they're not interested in that, then you go back to the filmmaker and you say, listen, your idea that, you know, in your mind is a great idea has basically just been passed on by every streamer. So you need to ask yourself, okay, it goes back to exactly what you were just saying. Where am I going to make the money on this film? You can still make the film and make that nut on transactional, you know, Amazon and iTunes and stuff, but it's going to be a lot less. And you need to say, okay, so maybe I don't spend $300,000 on this movie. Maybe I spend $125,000 and you shave down the budget and you, you know, as a producer and director, you don't take the salary that you wanted to take, and all of those things come into play. So, right. you know, we have the ability to do that. And then it's the same thing with licensing, because they don't license a whole lot anymore. These are finished films. While I'm in the building, and if I'm meeting with the original folks, I'll also meet with licensing people. So I don't do that as much as I used to, only because there's a schedule that is now. I used to go in a couple times a quarter, but now it's once a quarter, because there's so many other things happening. You have to make sure you're not going in right before a film festival or right after a film festival, because their mind is there. The same thing with the film market. Sometimes I have those meetings at the film markets, whether it be Berlin or Cannes or AFM. So it's getting the product, whether it be something that you want to make or something that you've already made, in front of those people. And we still have the ability to do that, though we are not as successful as we used to be, because they're just not buying.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Let's go back to, you know, to ask you the first, what filmmakers are doing that's successful.
Yes.
What have you been seeing that's not working?
What definitely does not work, and that doesn't mean we won't take on the film, is that filmmaker that comes and has nothing. They haven't done their homework. They don't, you know, we ask them to help us with, you know, identifying places to go to talk about their film, and they have not identified any of them yet. And it's not their fault. They went to film school. They were never taught this. It's not their fault, because it took them a year and a half to make their movie, and the whole world changed in a year and a half. I can't blame the filmmaker, but it's just the reality. And, you know, that's really the main problem that we run into with some filmmakers. And again, I don't blame them. We still try as hard, but, you know, that's the difference. What you're doing or what you're offering with this type of podcast didn't exist 2 years ago, 3 years ago, when they started making their movie.
True. Do you?
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. And then the number one thing is overspending. It's so easy to spend money. You just have to be so careful every penny that goes out the door. And that means that you might not get that $45,000 cinematographer that you want. Just might not be able to do it. And there's really good cinematographers for a lot less money.
Especially these days.
Especially these days.
Yeah. And also there's equipment that is good that is less money as well.
Yes.
I mean, everything's getting cheaper, which is good. Okay. So my next question is, you know, we had talked about, I guess what I'm wondering is, how often are filmmakers coming to you versus how much are you finding films and seeking out the filmmakers?
90% of the films that we release are folks that come to us from recommendations.
Okay.
Just like your film came to us.
How do people pitch you?
They send me an email or Tim an email and they say, hey, we got this film. Would you like to see it? In every single case, we say, send us a link. I don't care what the film is. We're going to watch the film. Every film gets a shot. And then we watch the film and we take it from there. If we pass on it, we'll send back a very nice email saying, sorry, we pass. We don't get into big time specifics, because then it'll create an email train that'll go on forever. And if we're interested, then the next step is getting on the phone with the filmmaker.
And do you distribute anything other than features? And do you distribute anything other than docs?
Yeah, I'm looking for a good horror movie.
Really?
You have to. Yeah, we released a really good film called Missing Couple that was kind of like a found footage film that continues to do well. We just put out a film called Home Free, Canadian film by a great filmmaker by the name of Avi Fettergreen that it's a family drama that we're kind of struggling with a little bit because the cast is unheard of, but it's a beautiful film about aging and how children deal with their aging parents, one of them being very
sick. Got that going on right now. I could do that doc myself or do that film myself.
So we definitely will look. We're looking at narratives more now than we ever have been. Not that we're going to get away from docs at all, but yeah, we look at anything. But it has to be a feature film. We tried shorts years ago. And, you know, you're still putting in all the effort and you're getting no returns whatsoever. So, no, we don't do shorts. People do pitch us things. It could be a potential series. Same thing. While we're sitting in that office, whether it be Apple or whoever I'm sitting with, I could pitch the series concept as well.
Yeah.
What I don't recommend. What I don't recommend. And there are filmmakers that do this is before they even show it to anybody, they'll go out and they will film the first three episodes.
Yeah. Don't do that.
Don't do that.
Yeah, not a good idea. Spending too much money when you have no idea even gonna. Right. Wow. I mean, I'm learning a lot even today. You know, it's amazing how things have changed since we first met. They are changing all the time.
It is, and it's difficult to keep up with, but it's very encouraging for me and for Tim to begin to see things like, you know, again, I'm not here to just praise documentary first, but what you're doing and what a lot of other podcasters and bloggers are doing is helping get the word out about films. And I think back to films that we released 3, 4, 5, 6 years ago. I wish this was in place at that point, because I think this will become the norm. As much as I, as you know, the guy that gets the New York Times on his driveway every weekend, they're going away, you know?
Yeah, I know.
And that's just a sign of the times, and it just is a sign of how old I am, you know. And the other thing is the younger crop of filmmakers, the people, the To Die Fors, the Jeff Roths, Man in a Hat, what I'm encouraged by, they're much younger than I am. And a lot of the things that they're doing, not only would I not have a clue on how to do, but I don't even want to learn. But I have a partner by the name of Tim Maggiani that has embraced that world to a point that you know, he owns it. And it's fantastic because, you know, me, I just want to watch movies.
Yeah. Well, I think you guys are a great pair because you do have that experience. You have those relationships in the industry. He is young and he does have that desire to learn and grow. And, you know, it's a good match for sure. I think you guys make a great team. And, you know, I appreciate your kind words for the podcast. And I do agree with you. It really is the only way to get your word out about films. People used to think dump a lot of money into social media about advertising your film, but that doesn't work. I never found the return on that. Simply, you also cannot show a return on your investment. You just can't. And so it's a serious waste of money, in my opinion. You're just dumping, I don't know, you're throwing good money after bad. And it just does not make a lot of sense if you're a filmmaker to do that. Yeah, well, thank you. Now, I'm just wondering, is there anything else going on in your life I need to know about? What's happening at Virgil Films?
So, yeah, I mean, we're still acquiring and releasing films every month. You just spoke about, you know, Man in a Hat, when things are appropriate, which most of them are. We introduced that filmmaker to you guys and some other podcasters to try to help get the word out. And, you know, one of the good things about today's business is, let's say your movie comes out today, but the person isn't on the podcast until next month. That's fine, because we all live in this world of instant gratification. Street date almost doesn't mean anything anymore. Because we want to be promoting the movie 3 months from now. We don't want to stop. We want somebody on your podcast next month talking about a movie that came out last month. It doesn't matter when they're on the podcast. The only thing that does matter is we don't want that filmmaker to be exposing the film until after it comes out, not before it comes out.
Two things I wanted to ask you about. I meant to say, you've said a few times now, the good thing, blah, blah, blah. One of my questions was going to be, is there anything to be encouraged about? And I want to reiterate, you've now said the good thing is There are ways that you can get the word out, such as podcasts and blogs. You also said, we know that equipment's getting less expensive, good filmmaking, like cinematographers, et cetera, are getting less expensive. Are there any other things that you can think about, other good news that's out there that we don't need to be getting all down about?
You know, it's easy to get down about everything. I think that the good news would be I'm seeing more and more filmmakers not caring about the bad things that are happening and striving forward to make good films, inspirational stories, films that matter, documentaries that matter, in spite of everything else that's happening around them, or having ideas to make good films that will resonate with audiences and maybe educate and entertain them. And not all just nice, inspirational, we all smile at the end, but some hard-hitting stuff as well. And staying away from the political, firestorm that's happening on a daily basis, because that changes so much that you're going to make a movie in 6 weeks from now, it's going to be a totally different story.
So true.
Yeah. So that's very, very encouraging.
Good. Well, next question is, in the old days,
last week,
there used to be a pathway, which was your street date was you release in the theater, you have the theatrical release, then you go to DVD, then you go, and there was this whole pathway. That does not apply anymore. That went out the window a while. What does the pathway look like now?
So the pathway, there is still a street date. It's funny that we still call it street date. That's the term that was invented back in 1982. It's really release date. That's really, the business needs to change it to release date. In fact, maybe we'll start changing it to release date. There has to be a date that your movie is available to the public, whether it be on a screen in a theater or whether it be on Amazon and iTunes and Vudu to go rent. Release date is always the first date your film is available. And in most cases, that is, if it is picked up by Netflix, unless it's an original, that is not the first date. That date comes 2 or 3 months later. Your first date is your transactional date. The date the movie is available to go find on sites all around the world and rent or purchase your movie digitally. So that pattern is still there.
Do you know what IMDb told me? IMDb told me my release date is my first film festival.
Yeah, well, that's not true.
Well, it's not true in the real world, but I'm not allowed to change it on IMDb because they're only going by when my first film festival was.
Yeah, that's age old. It's disheartening that they would say that, and it's probably because there is no actual person. It's usually it's probably a bot, or it's just something that's in their system.
Yeah, because it makes my movie look a lot older.
Yeah, you really put a film in a film festival, your movie might not come out for a year and a half.
I know. It says 2019 on there.
That's ridiculous.
I know. It's crazy. All right. So let's say it gets into Netflix, or let's say Amazon Prime pays money for it. So Netflix or Amazon Prime. Then after that, let's say they have a 2-year deal or whatever. What happens after that? It goes to transactional and
Well, no, it's on transactional while it's on Netflix.
Same time. Okay, then what happens?
So you continue to, say it's on Netflix for 2 years, comes off of Netflix, and then you immediately go back to all of the other SVOD accounts that will probably say no, but you repitch it. But your focus, the Netflixes or the Apples of the world is the candle on the icing of the cake. It's just more revenue coming down the road. Your focus is always not primarily, your focus is always 100% on the transactional release. You're not going to promote the movie being on a streamer, because a streamer is going to give you a one lump sum of money. And whether you promote the heck out of it to get people to go there and watch it, they're not going to give you any more money. So you already got that money. You already have that deal. So all of your efforts have to go towards the transactional.
So stay that way forever. But there's an order of transactional.
Once it's on transactional, so it goes on every site at the same day. Your film, when we released it, became available on Amazon and Vudu and whatever was, I'm not
Apple
sure
if TV.
Google Play was, whatever those accounts were. It's on there forever.
Okay.
Or until we take it down.
But then there's others. Then there's YouTube, Pluto.
Okay, I'm sorry. So over the past couple of years, AVOD has come into play, the YouTube and the Tubis and the Plutos. When, if there is no streaming deal, no Netflix deal, then we will look at when is the best time to put it up on those sites. Because those sites will advertise, come see my movie for free. Because you can go to Tubi and you don't have to pay. And gets or the distributor and the filmmaker gets a piece of the advertising, the commercials that appear throughout the film. So you don't want to do that the same day as transactional, unless there's a reason to do it. So that's where, you know, Tim's expertise comes into play, because every film is different. And he will window out when it should be on AVOD and make that decision with the filmmaker. He doesn't just do it.
Based on what your sales are on the transactional platform.
And based on what we think the sales are going to be. Most of the time, it's 2 to 3 months.
And then you also have library options.
Library options. And these are things that we try to exploit through Canopy or through any of the other library sites throughout the term of the film.
Yeah. Now, Amazon, for sure, and YouTube now have ad platforms.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, is my film, I know it's on the Amazon, you know, TVOD, is it also on AVOD?
No, and that's really a Tim question, because we want to make sure we exploit the transactional business as far out as we can.
I see.
Before it possibly goes on an AVOD site where that could harm the transactional business. I'm not positive where, you know, if your film's up on the Amazon AVOD site. I know it probably isn't. Netflix also has an AVOD site that our films are not available that part of Netflix. It's very tricky when to put your film up. But we have a great relationship with Tubi. We visit them, you know, when we go out to LA. We talk about windowing with them. If Tubi were to come and say, you know, you have this movie called A Girl, you know, your film, and we really like it, and we want to give you this sum of money if you don't put it up anywhere else, any other AVOD platforms, we'd come back to you and say, hey, we got an offer. You know, that's what we do. And there is multiple, you know, ways. Or we try to exploit multiple ways of bringing in money throughout the term of the film. If the film works, there's so many films that, you know, you've tried it and it just doesn't work. And every quarter you're making, you know, $120, and you come to realize that some films just aren't going to work.
One other thing I want to bring up, which I've just learned about, is that my film is now on several torrent sites.
You know, in the old days, we used to say, if somebody's booting my movie, it's a good thing, because I get a movie that's good enough to be booted. You can try to take them down. You can get them taken down, and you can, you will drive yourself crazy.
Yeah, I know. I've talked to several people now, and they're like, well, people are doing that because they don't have access to your film. And that's why they're wanting it. It's probably in Europe. My movie is only on Canal Plus, and people in France, a lot of them don't have Canal Plus, actually, because it is a subscription service. So it's very possible that's one thing going on. But for those of you who don't know what torrent is, it is a pirating site where they take, you know, portions of your film and they put portions up, and then people can go and download all the portions and then make the whole film. And I was very disturbed to learn that. But then at the same time, what are you going to do? There's nothing you can do.
I mean, the studios don't do anything.
But I actually am learning that there are lawsuits right now that are going on, which could very well make that illegal. I mean,
well, it is illegal.
It is illegal, but not possible anymore.
Yeah, the problem is,
I don't know how, but
most of those sites are originating from China.
Mm-hmm.
Believe it or not, Iraq, a lot of third world countries that we have no jurisdiction whatsoever. Years ago, and I forget who was even the president at that time, it was that long ago, there was some talk about saying, you know, if your country allows this to happen, there will be ramifications. Nothing ever came of that. I do remember a very good friend of mine was running MGM at the time, and this is when it was big, you know, when it first started, that you can go to a site and you can download and watch a movie that just opened up on Friday, you know, the previous Friday. So MGM found out about these folks, and I forget what country it was in, and there was going to be a major bust. And they showed up with the local authorities, busted into the place. And this place was so sophisticated that they had tunnels that went down into the ground across the street so they could escape. It was that big of a business, that big of a business. And they shut them down. And, you know, 2 days later, the film was still available on 100 other sites. So there's just nothing you can do.
Yeah. Wow.
Now, but again, you see your film, you know, sometimes we see films in the old days, we see films put up on YouTube. And this is for you, YouTube for free, where it's not supposed to be. And then you alert us, and that we can get taken down. But again, I encourage filmmakers, we can't, you know, we got 1,000 movies. We can't be looking on, you know, it's up to the filmmaker to constantly look and see if their film's being available on recognizable mainstream sites where it shouldn't be.
Yeah. Okay. Good to know. I'll go check.
Yeah.
All right. I interrupted you, took us down a different path. I had asked you what new is going on Virgil Films. You're like, we're still putting up movies. We're still talking to people. Is that it? Anything else going on?
Yeah, there is actually one more thing going on that I don't want to talk about this in length. So it's going to be a little bit vague only because I...
Okay.
Do but, tell. You're going to be... This is crazy. I'm going to say it.
Okay.
I have finished producing a documentary.
What?
I have written, directed, and produced a documentary. It's done.
You're too old for that.
It's in the can. It is a Philadelphia-based documentary about a sports team here in Philadelphia that I've been working on now for 2.5 years.
If you need a distributor, I know one.
I've kept it very, very quiet, but it looks like it's going to come out in April. As soon as everything is confirmed, I do want to come back to you and talk about the film, what I've been through, and a lot of the things that we talked about today. In fact, everything that we talked about today, I have now personally been through myself. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of things that I've learned that I can share is one, it's really, really hard to make a movie.
Yeah, it has not. But, you know, it's definitely not gotten easier for sure to make a movie.
Yeah. Maybe I'm lucky because I didn't have to experience it when it was easier.
Yeah.
If it ever was easier.
Well, what are the major things that have changed since the last time?
Mainly, never go make a movie when you have another job. Yeah, and because of a lot of the things we talked about budgetary-wise, everyone that helped me with this movie has other jobs.
Has
full-time
jobs,
you know? So everything from editing to actual on-the-ground filming to everything could not, like, I didn't have a 25-day shooting schedule. Mm-hmm. So those are the things that when I do this again, and I will do it again, I know. Don't do a story where it's going to take you some, you know, people aren't going to be available because they live 2,000 miles away. And, you know, yes, they're coming to Philadelphia and you can film them for free, but they're not going to be here for 2.5 months. Or you can spend $5,000 to go into the hinterlands of Canada to find them. And so, you know what the answer to that question is. So,
yeah.
But yeah, it's very, very hard. And it's very, very, now that the film is finished and there will come a time where people will get to see it, it's very nerve-wracking. And until it comes out, I'm going to feel this way. But I wish I started doing this many, many years ago. I can't wait to do it again.
I'm so proud of you. That's so, so exciting. Are you in the rights and clearances section right
all
now?
All done.
That's all that's done.
Everything's done.
Well, then what are you waiting on?
Release date with a huge theater, huge, in Philadelphia that wants to premiere it.
That's exciting. Man, I may have to come for that.
That's what it is. That's the holdup. And I can't really, until you have your premiere date, I can't plan anything else. But hopefully all that's done within the next, 4 or 5 days. There's a meeting. I'm supposed to have a meeting with them on Monday. Unfortunately, I don't know if you're watching the weather, but my area is supposed to get 25 inches of snow starting on Sunday. So Monday's not going to happen. But yeah, we're very close to confirming that date. And then everything follows around it. But yeah,
congratulations.
I'd be more than happy to talk to you about it in length. Maybe even one of the main characters in the film will join us. We'll see.
Oh, I would love that. That would be amazing. I cannot wait. Oh, that's just super. What a great way to end our podcast. I mean, you know what you're talking about from both sides of the camera. It's just really great. Everybody, this has just been such a pleasure to have you, Joe. Thank you for sharing your wisdom with us, your time with us. I'm so incredibly grateful for your friendship and for just everything you mean to me and you mean to this podcast.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Always pleasure. Always a pleasure.
Yep. All right, everybody. Thank you for listening to Documentary First, where we believe everybody has a story to tell, and you can be the one to tell it. Bye, everybody.
Thank you.
Hey, everybody. This podcast is brought to you by Documentary First Productions, and we need your support so that we can keep preserving history. If you could go over and grab some merch or watch our films at documentaryfirst.com, you'll help us keep making awesome documentaries and sharing the stories that matter, and also bring amazing filmmakers and their wonderful films to the world. So thank you so much for listening, and thank you for visiting documentaryfirst.com.
Thank you for listening to Documentary First. We really appreciate your partnership with us. We can't do any of this without you. So thank you for listening, donating, and following along on our journey. We are supported by generous donations from people just like you. To make a donation, visit thegirlwhowarefreedom.com or support us on Patreon at patreon.com/documentaryfirst. To learn more about our other works in progress, visit documentaryfirst.com or follow Documentary First on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. This podcast was produced by Documentary First, edited and mixed by Jason Hoban, with music by Jeff Kurtenacker.